Well, Anthony, you ready to move on?
Let's keep it going.
All right.
That was a great, great, that was a great conversation. Segment.
Really interesting, folks. Now we have a woman who's been on our show before. She is the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party, who has been living in Romneyville in Tampa Bay. Sherry Honkola from Philadelphia, who's been an activist for her entire life. Sherry, welcome. Good to have you back with us.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good to be here. Good. So far, we've survived Hurricane Isaac and tons of rain. And, well, we haven't survived the Republicans yet, but that's something that we're working on doing, getting rid of them and their horrible policies.
So, Sherry, this is Anthony McCarthy. What is the mission and what is the message that you and those who are joining with you want the American people to hear in contrasting the messages that we're going to hear all week out of the Republican National Convention?
Well, I think the important thing is that poor folks and working class people across this country do have work ethics. We work really hard. We love our children. We're not just sitting around. And as some of the conventioners have talked about, what we need to do is just get a job. We have a responsibility to be out here in these streets, lifting our voices, passing on the torch to the younger generation in an effort to, save our future, because the only thing that low-income and working-class people have these days is their voice. And the more that they're filling the streets with police and restricting our rights to freedom of speech, we're really in trouble as a country.
So, Sherry, what about Romneyville?
Romneyville is a homeless encampment that's been set up, where poor and homeless families from across the country have been coming to stay. They can't really afford the thousands of dollars to stay in the hotels here in Tampa. And so families have been staying there, and we've been feeding them and doing educationals. And today we just had a very successful march in the pouring down rain. Hundreds of people came out to lift their voices, and there was tons of press from across the entire country, so folks were able to talk about the horrible conditions that are happening in Texas and in Alabama, Baltimore, Philadelphia, you name it.
And so, Sherry, is the hope that we will get the message about the alternatives to the traditional parties, or the parties that appear to get the majority of most people's attention, that we will actually get the message of the Green Party as a viable option out to the American people?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I haven't remembered in a long time where you had activists from around the country, a large number of Occupy folks, and low-income folks, and a very diverse crowd of people marching in a demonstration, and at the same time carrying, Stein Honkola placards, and, wearing buttons saying, occupy the ballot and vote green. So I think that this is a really exciting piece, because most folks have just said that they're going to sit out the election this time, that they're, disappointed with Obama, and they've come to learn that he has only been representing the corporate interests of the 1%, and that he, too, spent just as much money on the military as George W. Bush. And so people are really coming to understand that they need to get involved in supporting this motion towards political independence, and the agenda that fits most Americans is the Green Party.
Isn't it amazing, and I'm just asking for your thoughts on this, the contrast of perception and perspective. We just listened to some Republican folks explain how the president has been bad for corporate America, that he has been bad for business. But the folks on the left really believe, and that he has really represented the interests of corporate America well, America appears to be very polarized around these issues.
Yes, they certainly are. Mm-hmm. But both parties, there's a huge disconnect from your average American who every day is having to work two or three jobs just to hold on to their home and be able to pay their mortgage. They're disconnected from, you know, the over 40 million people that don't have any health care and have to worry about whether or not they're going to get sick and how they're going to get their medicine. And so it was a very good indication that people are understanding that they can't any longer afford to just sit on the sidelines, that they've got to get off the bench, that they've got to get involved in bringing other political parties to this country. We're so backward. Most places in the world, there's anywhere from, you know, 10 to 15 different kinds of political parties. And in this country, we just have one political party, which represents the rich.
So the two quick questions, Sherry. I mean, one is that while there are clearly places where Republicans and Democrats are the same, and of course, but there's other parts of this where this kind of racism plays into this attacks against Democrats and attacks against Obama in particular, as an anti-colonialist, is not really an American. So that affects a lot. And also, I raise this because I think it affects the reason why so many people in communities of color in America support Barack Obama, and why in many ways. Why there is a lot of racism in America still that exists, and you know that very well as well, which is what plays into the why people are going to vote against Obama. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
The complexity of it.
Absolutely. I mean, the gloves are off. Romney and Ryan really represent a racist agenda and certainly don't care about people of color in this country. But you know what? They don't care about poor whites either. And they're trying to pretend like they're appealing to, they represent the interests of poor whites in America and that they care about the working class. Well, the real deal is that they don't care about any of us. And if we're not, you know, exploitable, then we're expendable. And so it's really important that, you know, people don't fall into this idea that somehow they're, you know, a poor worker in America that happens to be white, that Ryan and Romney care about them. They don't care about them either. But it's not, it's time that, you know, that we get together and that we vote for a ticket that really represents courage and that we give a couple women a chance in this country to turn the White House into a greenhouse and to develop the kinds of cabinets that will deal with the kind of racism that exists in this country, cabinets that are going to deal with bringing about real peace. And that means not just bringing the troops home and getting them out of Afghanistan, but bringing peace to our neighborhoods and our streets. And, you know, in terms of dealing with women's issues, making sure that we have, you know, women and minorities that dominate these cabinets and can be a part of crafting the solutions to the problems that are faced by most Americans.
Sherry Hanklow, we're going to be following you down through the campaign trail as Green Party vice presidential candidate. Looking forward to having you on the show many times from now on November 4th. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you all. And any listeners out there that are in Baltimore, get involved and vote green. Thank you.
Take care,
Sherry. Thank you,
Sherry. Sherry Hanklow, vice presidential candidate for the Green Party, has joined us here. She's helping lead Romneyville in this Tampa Bay at the Republican National Convention. We'll talk to her again during the Democratic National Convention, see what the Green Party is doing there as well. And Anthony McCarthy and I will be back after this brief break and be joined by
Governor Bob Ehrlich, former Republican governor of the state of Maryland, going to be sharing some interesting, I'm sure, perspectives with us on this election.
And who is also chairman of the Romney campaign in Maryland and a delegate, I guess, to the convention.
In Tampa right
their,
now.
Their version of a superdelegate.
That's right.
Yes. Well, he is a superdelegate. He's a former governor.
Right. He is a superdelegate.
We'll be right back. Stay with us. And Bob Ehrlich, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Governor.
Well, you staying dry?
Well, we had a bumpy flight.
I bet.
But I'll tell you, we actually came in. It comes in waves. The sun comes out, and then it's a tropical storm, then the sun comes out, and then the cycle's repeated. And we actually came in during a decent interval, but we've been here a couple hours. And, Mark, I am not a superdelegate. I've actually never been a delegate to any convention.
Never.
I've never wanted to use up a slot for people who, you know, and both of you know a lot of people fit this category, both parties, the real poll workers, the real grassroots mm-hmm. people. This is such a huge deal to do this, to be a delegate or be an alternate, that I just never did that. I'm actually down here just as a member of the surrogate team for Mitt. So I'm really actually, we're not staying with the Maryland delegation.
Huh, very interesting. So what role will you be playing at the convention? Any?
Say it again, Mark.
What role will you be playing at the convention? Any?
There is a surrogate team. It is made up of, and basically what I'm doing at home. It's any difference here? Is all the press is here in one spot. At home, whether I'm going to Pennsylvania or Iowa or Ohio today, I'm just running around. And what they'll do is they'll say, "All right, Ehrlich, you have CNN at 6, you have MSNBC at 7:30, you have this." And that's what we're doing. That's what the surrogates do.
So, Governor, I want to ask you first and foremost, these conventions, we know they're pretty much laid out. Things are structured. But what is the message? What's the introduction that Mitt Romney has to give this week and all of the folks that come before him, Ann and the others, to introduce this candidate to the American people as the possible next president of the United States? What's the message that has to resonate?
Well, first of all, a political science observations, and I'm talking to two learned individuals here who really know politics. The conventions are almost passé.
Very
they
true.
Used to be relevant. they actually, it was a cigar-filled back room, and deals were cut, and votes were cast, and it was really cool. And our kids, they have no recognition of that fact. They have to watch old movies. Today, it's all an infomercial, and that's what the Republican convention is, the Democratic convention,
right.
Doesn't matter which
that's
party.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. And then, quite frankly, the surrogates, people like me, are you know, today fairly relevant, unlike in the past, because there's so many media outlets. This is my schedule on Wednesday. It's crazy. But the point here is, one, it's an infomercial, so you have to understand nothing real gets done. It's not substantive. It's not
that's
policy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the platform is, obviously, but outside of that, with the for consumption by the American people, the message is the message. And the message, Anthony, to answer your question, is, all right, you see this sort of business guy. He's a wealthy guy. He's a handsome guy. He's got a beautiful wife. He has beautiful children. But what's he really about? When you get off the surface, what makes him tick? What are his values? What kind of president is he? But most important, or would be, but most importantly, what kind of person is he after you get through the business suit deal? And that's the goal. Quite simply, that's the goal of this convention in a couple sentences.
Number is 410-319-8888. Write to us here, steinershow@gmail.com, and bring your thoughts to the airways. Anthony McCarthy and I are talking with Bob Ehrlich, of course, former governor of Maryland, chairman of the Romney campaign in the state of Maryland, and now at the Republican National Convention in Tampa. 410-319-8888. Let's talk about some of the controversies coming up, because I know when you get me in your show, you're going to do it to me. I'm going to do it to you now.
Watch him, Mark. I was on there this weekend. Watch him, Mark.
Did you rat me out, Anthony?
No. Great experience.
Thank you. And by the way, Mark, I can do a cheap plug here. Anthony, obviously, the guest on our show, Politics Unplugged with Bob and Kendall Ehrlich, WMAR, Sunday morning, 10 o'clock.
It's an incredible show, Bob. I was telling Mark, the production value is extraordinary.
That's what I hear.
Great show.
Thank you.
And you try to find your progressive or liberal sacrificial lamb every week, correct?
At least Kendall will be there. She likes you.
That's right.
At least Kendall likes me. That's good. At least somebody does. But so, well, one of the things that the New York Times and the places have talked about is Romney, Governor Romney, making a speech. One of the things he said was, in that speech, of course, that's the one thing that was picked up, which is that at least nobody asked me for my birth certificate. Or other Republicans saying that... to teach Barack Obama how to be an American. That this is so. I mean, what is your response to that? I mean, what do you?
Anthony knows. Well, first of all, let's just be really upfront and blunt as usual. And Anthony knows my response. And I have been hypercritical of both campaigns.
Yes.
And I have been. And I'm a surrogate, and I'm supposed to repeat some of these lines, but I don't when I do the cable interviews and all that. I'm tired of dogs on cars. I'm tired of birth certificates. I'm tired of all the parenthetical, goofy stuff that, quite frankly, nobody cares about. I mean, and Mark, it's a function of, and you guys know this, I mean, I don't want to indict the entire media, but it's a function of the 24/7, real-time, cyberspace media. And because time has to get filled up, so they tend to focus on the parenthetical. Look, I think Joe Biden committed a terrible gaffe the other week, but I haven't repeated. I haven't talked about it. It was a gaffe. Whether it's Republican or Democrat gaffes, people are human. They make mistakes. And you guys know, even in my campaigns, I try not to. If my opponent made a gaffe, and I'm, as opposed to, by the way, what they really think, I just never wanted to jump on it. So I think to the extent that the news media plays into this and people play into it, it doesn't solve any problem. It's part of the irrelevant, and I just have no sense for it. I can't stand it.
But to the other point of that, and I've known you, and Mark have known you, and we certainly know and have had disagreements with you on policy. But what about this? And it's a perception, Governor. But there are real priorities and policies that often raise the question mark about race and the Republican Party. And
well, Anthony, I think in fairness. And I think it's a great discussion, and we've had this discussion mm-hmm. for 15 years?
Yeah.
Probably both of you. And you guys know I've written about it, I've talked about it, I've given speeches about it, first African-American lieutenant governor, statewide elected official on my ticket. So I have some credibility here. It's I would just contend to you that with an African-American president, that it's not a very fair comparison. I mean, 95%, 96%, 98, 94, whatever poll you want to believe, of African Americans are going to vote for Barack Obama. And so I think it's a fairer barometer, a fairer contrast, a fairer discussion when there's a white candidate for president on the Democratic side. And I know the numbers don't improve that much, but obviously it's a work in progress. The Democrats have a huge problem with working class white people these days, as you know. So both parties have their challenges, trust me.
They do. I mean, I guess I'm going to come down to some of the issues here in a moment you think are going to be important and how that's going to be framed, because this is important for Governor Romney to make a leap in this after this convention with the voters he's going for. But, I mean, we talked about it in the segment. There was a debate on the show in the first part of the hour over race in this campaign, and one of the things brought up during that was that ever since Willie Horton and going down through where we are now, whether it's talking about, you know, whether you see the new film coming out talking about Barack Obama's anti-colonialist agenda in his next administration, or whether it's talking about the kind of both campaigns have lied in their ads. I mean, but the campaign ad that talked about Barack Obama wanted to take back the work requirement for welfare, which is not true.
There's a lot of truth to it, Mark. I mean, it's just
where's the truth?
It lessens the requirements of the bill. I was there. I mean,
That's just what Republicans wanted to do, which was to give more power back to the states, right?
Not the work requirement. That was an essential part of the bill. But anyway, finish your question. I'm sorry.
No, that's cool. I mean, I want you because what I was going to say here is that, I mean, about the bill, but I'll get right back to that. Is that all these things being laid out, and what comes up in people's minds when you hear welfare, whether it's Ronald Reagan's welfare queen or is about black people,
there's more white people in welfare than black.
Yeah, but folks don't look at it that way.
Who says?
Do they?
But here's the deal. Let me just kind of cut to the chase here. You and I, we all look forward to today. Anthony, I know Anthony many years. As a friend, we all look forward to the day where race is irrelevant. Now, are we there? No. Are we close? No. I could argue to you both that someone with his limited credentials, his race helped him become president. This is a guy who literally, a great American success story, but as soon as he got elected to one position, he was running for the next. His record in the Illinois legislature and the Southern United States was very thin. You both know it. He spent a cup of coffee in the private sector. Very ambitious guy, smart guy, intelligent guy, charismatic guy, family man, love that stuff. But these credentials are really thin to be president, and you both know it. So I would argue to you that race works both ways when it comes to a guy like this, and it benefited him last time. Is there racism in America? Yeah. Is there less racism than ever? I would argue, yeah. So I just think I have, whether it's a white racist or a black racist, I've seen both. So both of you have as well. I think it's enough. I have no patience with it, and I don't put up with it in my teaching my kids. I'm not going to put up with it in my politics.
So how can, and I've heard this from some of my Republican friends, Anthony, you all are using every diversionary tactic in the world to avoid talking about the economy and the state of the economy.
Which is smart politics.
But by the same token, Governor, how can the conversation be switched? How can Mitt Romney, how can his surrogates, how can the party this week and going forward towards November keep the conversation focused on the issues that Americans say is very important to them?
Well, here's the deal, and listen, it's not going to happen this week. This is all an infomercial,
good
so forget
point.
That. It's not going to happen next week. But here's when it can happen. And Anthony, you heard my Politics Unplugged one-minute speech on our show. It can happen in a debate. The debate is the one place where all the garbage doesn't stick. If you have a really good moderator, the debate is a sort of a cleansing process. Nobody cares about if Mitt Romney took his dog on the roof of his car or Barack Obama's birth certificate. It's okay. You don't like Ryan's Medicare plan, Mr. President? What's yours? All right, Mr. Romney, what's your plan to turn on 8.3 unemployment? Answer the question. I mean, if you're really talking about substance and meat, that's the time, by the way, and that's basically the only time where that occurs.
Are social issues, Governor, less important in an economy like this?
Yeah.
When we talk about abortion, when we talk about same-sex marriage. I
got to tell you guys, I'm running around. My real job is running around with another state. This is a surrogate for Mitt, besides the job that pays my mortgage, the King of Spalding. It's interesting. This is all about... It's not just the economy. It's certainly about jobs, but it's about dollars and cents. It's if it has a dollar sign attached to it, whether it's your savings, your 401k, your kids' education, Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, entitlement reform, jobs, it's all about dollars and cents. Very few people come up to me these days, unlike the past, by the way, abortion, gun control, same-sex marriage, whatever happens to be. Now, Maryland, obviously, maybe a little different given the referendum, but the fact of it is when unemployment is this high, this long, when the middle class is this angst driven, people are upset, they're angry, and you see that play out. So they want to hear adults talk about adult things, I hope. And as I said, that will occur during the debate.
410-319-8888. The lines are open. We can join us here. Phones are working. Lines are open. Talk with Governor Robert Ehrlich. Bob Ehrlich, of course, is in Tampa, where he is working with the Republican Party. He is chairman of the Romney campaign here in Maryland, a surrogate for Romney across the country. 410-319-8888. But I think one of the things that has to happen in this in these next few days with Governor Romney, as all the papers have been talking about, conservative and liberal and everything in between, is that most Americans still trust Barack Obama to handle the economy and not Mitt Romney. So what is it that Mitt Romney has to do to change that from your perspective?
Well, I'm not sure I buy that, Mark. Just and different polls show different things, but the fact that an incumbent president is stuck in the mid-40s and in a column race shows you that maybe that's not the case. But regardless, you're right that, in a sense, whichever candidate proffers the best argument on jobs and job creation and getting the middle class less nervous, that candidate's going to win the race. Now, I believe, as I said, that this convention is less about that and more about the fluff. And the, by the way, the fluff in this case isn't all fluff, because it's, when I talk about fluff, I'm talking about non-issues. Clearly, there's a sense America fell in love with Barack Obama, his story, everything about him. There's no doubt about it. Even Republicans say, some say, well, you know, I really like the job Mitt did, the Olympics, Massachusetts, businessman, all nine yards. I just don't know him. I just don't know him enough. Ann is unbelievable, unbelievably warm person. She is, by the way, a very, very strong surrogate out there on the trail. So I think that in this case, for the next few days, it's less about where my kid is getting a job and more about I need to get to know this guy at a little deeper level. Now, once this is over, once the Democratic convention is over, it's about my kid again. My kid, my smart kid, my kid with all those debts from college. Where's my kid going to get a job? That's what the election's about.
Go ahead.
410-319-8888. Joe, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hey, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
I was thinking, well, I have a couple issues, but one with the governor comes. He put it backwards. Middle class or working class white people have trouble with the Democrats. Now they have a trouble with Obama because he is black. That's one issue that we're not discussing. And
can I stop you there? Can I just stop you there? You're just wrong, and I'm not.
No,
going to
you are
argue
just
with
wrong.
You.
That's,
I'm just
going,
I'm
that's
just
not the
case. Look at,
well, let me look at this one at a time. Bob, I want you to finish your thought, but let Joe finish his question so you can jump
Joe,
in.
Finish your question.
Okay.
Please.
The case is, and if the governor should, he should know a little of politics. Black voters have been the most fickle voters in the history of this country. We have voted for white people against black people when they did not represent our interests. And what's happening, working class white people are voting against Obama and against their own interests because he is black. A working class white person who identifies with Romney, there's something wrong. There's something wrong when they identify with this millionaire who messed up the economy. I think Democrats should go and say, yes, it's about the economy. The Republicans messed it up, and it's in a recovery now.
Let the governor respond. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, first of all, the president is a multimillionaire many times over, and good for him. So
that's not the truth.
I don't hold
his
wealth. Sir, it's my turn.
Well, I don't know if he's a multimillionaire, but he's made some money with his books, but go ahead.
He's a millionaire many times over, and by the way, good for him. I'm happy for him. That's what America's all about. Good for him. And I'll just say this, and Mark and Anthony, I think you'll hopefully agree with me, because the numbers are the numbers. White working class voters for many cycles now have been trending Republican. That's just the fact of it.
And
not against white Democrats as well, sir.
So and Joe, thanks for the call.
How do you argue with that? Jeezy, please. That's the kind of stuff I do. You know, this is the kind of mentality that drives me crazy. And sir, you're certainly welcome to your opinion, but you're just wrong on that one.
Well,
and if you think people are voting for, I guess what you're really saying is white people are racist if they're not voting for Barack Obama. And I just can't argue with that, sir.
Well, that probably, no, the white people are not racist because they're not voting for Barack Obama. But I think sometimes we it's a very complex situation. I think we don't want to deal with it.
Because a lot of white people voted for Barack Obama last time. I know conservatives who voted for him. who didn't necessarily like his politics, but they thought it was the right thing to do for the country. So, yeah, it works both ways. You're right.
I might come back to ask the question about that to follow, but let me go to the next caller because I promise I would. Royce in Baltimore, you're on the air.
All right. Hi,
hi Royce.
Hi, Royce.
Welcome.
I'm relatively new to Baltimore, and so you can excuse my ignorance about your background. But I have two questions that are related to what you've been talking about, and they're both related to the role of the 24-hour news cycle and the Twitterification, if you will, of our political discussion. One is, how do we have an intelligent discussion about the issues when all of our information is taken from the cable news networks or Twitter or online blogs? And say, for example, with the Affordable Care Act, we don't have access or the ability really to digest all the information in that act. And my second question is, I'm really concerned about the deterioration of our discussion about race. I just feel like we can't have a frank discussion about it because I don't want to say everybody's too sensitive, but I just feel like we're either too far on the side of being too sensitive about things that are not serious, or ignoring things that used to be code words, like the welfare topic that you guys discussed a little bit earlier. And so those are my comments. Really, I'd like you guys to focus on the first one. If you want to comment on the second one, that's cool, too. I'm going to hang up my phone because my phone is not in sync with the radio.
Gotcha.
There's a little delay. Governor?
Well, first of all, I'm glad you moved here because I love your questions. They are probably the most pertinent questions I could think of this cycle in America today. The first question is, I don't know the answer. I don't pretend to know the answer. In a Twitter world where you're talking about Medicaid reform or Medicare, Social Security, or nuclear proliferation, or peace in the Middle East, or you name the issue, and that you have 100-and-some or 200-and-some characters to give an answer, it's crazy, and it's anti-intellectual, and it's not deep, and it doesn't make our discourse better. And I suspect my two buddies here will agree with that. Secondly, you're right. When everybody claims racism, when everybody's super sensitive to race, and one side or the other yells race, you're not talking about real racism. You're talking about gaffes or stupid things or parenthetical things that tend to get lost in the real debate. So your point is very well taken. Both points.
Well, I'm going to ask another quick question, and I'm not sure if we have some callers waiting for us to join in as we talk to Bob Ehrlich, the former governor of Maryland, who's in Tampa for the Republican National Convention. You mentioned, Governor, the thin resume of the president, and obviously he's president, which kind of buffs that.
To run for president.
That's right. Okay. I was going to say, now that he's president, that resume is pretty buffed up a lot. But I want to talk about Paul Ryan for a moment. And it is a conversation about economics. He's certainly the budget chair and has a very strong record when it comes to his perspective on Medicare and a lot of other issues. But when you look at him, and I know you know him, and I know that you support him, but when you look at him, you're comfortable that he could become president of the United States?
I am, but I think your point is well taken. Now, he has been in Congress for 14 years,
mm-hmm.
and he's traveled the world, obviously, and has experience that maybe a lesser-termed congressman or congresswoman would not. But as far as, first of all, he's never won a statewide race. Is that a fair criticism? Yes, I think it is. He's a member of the House. He's not represented as a state, as governor, or in the United States Senate. Fair criticism. So, Anthony, I think your point, I'm not going to be a hypocrite here. I think your point is well taken. Now, he has certainly assumed a leadership position, and not just a political leadership position, but an intellectual leadership position, if you will. He's a budget expert. He knows his stuff. He's a terrific debater. And as I said, he's traveled the country and the world with regard to issues important, particularly fiscal issues, important to Americans. Is his resume, by his very nature, what he's done with respect to foreign policy, is it thin? Of course it is, yes. But I think your point's well taken.
I think that one of the things we do have to debate, and I think it's important to, and maybe we can get you, Bob, when you're back in Baltimore, to join us here for a real kind of right-left Democratic-Republican debate on where it's going to be. So I think people need to think about, whether they agree or disagree, what it means if Romney wins, and Cantor then, as many people would argue, becomes the Speaker of the House, and that may be a Senate, and that is a very different agenda for America. What does that agenda mean? I think that's what we're not talking about, and I think that...
I think, Mark, you know, and I'm not sucking up here, but you know, for years you've talked substance, Anthony's talked substance, together you guys talk substance. Enough of the silly stuff, the gas, either side, you know, it's got to be fair here and even handle it. Enough of the focusing on the gas and misstatements. The politicians are human, they make mistakes, you're on the campaign trail, you're tired. Both of you know this, and enough of that stuff.
Do we have time for a quick call? Yes, no. And Reno, a very quick comment before we have to move on to our next segment.
Just a real quick one. I'm glad to hear Bob Ehrlich. As I was stating before, you know, I've been a Democrat all my life, always voted Democrat. And when he ran for the governor in Maryland, that was the first time I've ever voted Republican. And one of the reasons, not that I agree with everything that he says, but as my grandmother always say, I respect him because he's a straight shooter. You pretty much know where he's coming from. Unfortunately, like our current governor, but that's another day and time issue.
Reno, thanks so much for your call. And Bob Ehrlich.
That was my cousin, by the way. Hey, thanks, you guys. Great to talk.
Thanks,
Governor.
You
too.
Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate the thought there.
Take care. Bob Ehrlich joined us. He was governor of Maryland, of course, a delegate, not delegate, but chair of the Romney campaign in Maryland. And Anthony and I will take a brief break, come back, and we'll be joined by Jack Andraka, the 15-year-old student from Anne Arundel County who created a dipstick sensor to detect pancreatic cancer early, won a $75,000 award for it. We'll talk how he got there at 15 years old. His father's joining us, and his brother's joining us as well, who won that award, I think, last year. So stay with us.